Live from the Labyrinth, this is Derailed Trains of Thought.
Well, Tim, we were a nice place last time, but
I'm feeling a little lost.
Yeah.
Like, either the walls keep changing or something's moving all of my tiles. Like, I keep trying to mark where we're at, like, on the ground.
And I don't know. Something, the winds bring some sort of wretched stench from over in that direction.
Ugh. This is not a pleasant place.
No.
Walls are changing. I keep hearing voices from places. I'm not sure if it's the trees or if it's the rocks or if it's the insects or what's going on.
Yeah, there's just something wrong about this place.
Yeah, just and the few people I have seen, their pants are way too tight.
I agree, yes.
But thankfully, listeners, you are not here with us in this bizarre place. But we are glad that we have managed to bring our podcast equipment here because we have a very special episode in store for you.
Someone who should be in this maze with us because he knows such things.
I guess that's what they say.
Yeah.
Without further ado, we will now present a very special story school. All right, so we have to set this up here a little bit because we have a special guest today.
Yeah. Okay, so you may have heard on the podcast music by a guy with the handle of Maze Dude.
What?
I know. Actually, we've had, about 10 of his songs on our soundtracks, I think we counted?
Yeah, I double checked. Yeah, it was about 10.
He has a new Kickstarter started July 4th for his new album, American Pixels. It's a remix album. He's doing a lot of really neat stuff musically. I had signed up for it, 5 years ago when he first got the idea about it. He started the Kickstarter, he emails me like, hey, could you help out with the Kickstarter, etc. I'm like, sure, I'm glad you even remember me. And then I'm like, hey, would you mind telling Tim that there's this Glowworm Jim song that he keeps saying is too long for the podcast?
It's like 7 minutes long.
It is too long for the podcast. It is. And he said, sure, because he's a good guy.
So I get this email saying, hey, so I hear Glowworm Jim is a little too long for the podcast, eh? What if the creator, aka me, I'm paraphrasing here.
Yeah.
What if he made a special request for it? So it's like, okay. Thank you, Nick.
Checkmate.
Throwing me under the bus. So I saw that and I raised him one and I said, well, that could be arranged. What if the creator would also appear on the podcast? And he said yes.
So we're super excited in this pre-recorded section coming up to have an interview with Christopher Gettman, also known as Maze Dude.
Even if you're not that familiar with video game music, Chris talks a lot about his creative method, about how he thinks. And any creative person, I think, we could identify a lot with what he talked about here.
So you don't need to be musical. You just need to be willing to think outside the box.
Yes.
Enjoy. Welcome to Derailed Trains of Thought. Maze Dude, also known as Christopher Gettman, here to have a little chat with us.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
We're really honored that you decided to join us on the podcast tonight. It's pretty exciting.
It is pretty exciting. I'm like, whoa, cool.
An actual professional. This is crazy.
Well, you know, you guys were supporters of this project years ago, long before the Kickstarter, long before there was really anything to show for it. So, least I can do is give back and spend a few minutes talking about it and, stopping on board to say hi and support you guys and your endeavors. So yeah, happy to.
Awesome.
So normally on our podcast, we talk about creativity and storytelling. So I thought we'd start with asking, your music's pretty creative. What kind of, do you have any rhythms or habits that help you go through, come up with your ideas?
It's really different with every single track. And that's actually what I find a lot of pleasure in, is that every track tells a story, and that it's never a case of just sitting down and thinking it would be a fun idea to arrange this as a rock tune. But that there's three things going on at least with every single track. And I'm hoping to release some behind the scenes videos actually about the new album, about how that is a truth with every single track, where how, I'll just give you an example. On the new album, there's an arrangement of a theme from Mass Effect 2. And I actually never played that game. I never really got into that franchise, but I knew Jack Wall. I knew the composer. I met him at E3 back in like 05. And I was told to check out his music when he was working on Myst 3 way back when by my buddy Mustin. So, you know, I never even played Myst 3. I played the original Myst long, long time ago. And, you know, I checked out Myst 3. I checked out the soundtrack and I was blown away. So I kind of wanted to meet the composer just by... because I like the soundtrack. So we met, I honored him on the first American album. We became friends. And then, you know, it was time for this project. I reached out and I was like, hey, I'm honoring you again. What do you want to hear? And he said, how about the Suicide Mission theme from Mass Effect 2? So I checked that out and it was like epic orchestral choir, 7/4 meter. And I was like, okay, so how do I honor this? And that's been a weird thing with a lot of the pieces on this album is like, you know, how do I, with my humble, you know, tracking software, honor an orchestra and a choir? I can't accurately, you know, so I really got to like take it backwards and strip it down to something that would sound good electronically. Now, at the same time, there is a piece by a Swedish tracker who goes by the handle Radix or Mosaic. He's had a few nicknames in the past, but he has a piece called Transponder, which is this really... like this guy does a lot of like chill out, kind of like nice chill out stuff, but he does once in a while this oddball track that is just like heavy, heavy chill out, even though that's a oxymoron. And there's a piece called Transponder, which brings in like little kid voices, radio waves, all sorts of weird stuff. And I've always liked that tune and thought, man, I'd love to do a track in that style. So oddly enough, what happened was I took the Suicide Mission theme and rearranged it in this style. So, I mean, creatively, it was just kind of like a combination. It was like the happy marriage of this idea, this request, this need for a fusion, and this need for a genre for a particular, you know, fulfillment, and it just came together. But that's the story of one track, and there's 14 there, and they all tell a completely different story. So I know I rambled a bit, but hopefully that answers the question a little bit.
That's exactly what we're looking for.
Well, it sounds like you pull in a lot of different influences that, like you said, you don't necessarily start off with an idea, but you just kind of see where things take you.
Yeah, and it's fun for me to have like three different homages at the same time. You know, it's an homage to the game, it's an homage to the composer, it's an homage to a completely different composer, but I'm mimicking his style. So it's nostalgia on like three different channels, you know?
Nice.
Do you find it, is it harder to remix stuff you have not played?
A little. You know, it definitely feels more like intuitive if it's a game that I grew up playing, because I feel like I know the theme by heart. I've spent hours playing the game to it. I mean, I remixed a couple songs from Maniac Mansion, the original Nintendo game, on the new album. And those, you know, I've beaten that game so many times. I mean, like, I know those themes. I know what it is when you hear the Edison theme creep up and you're like, oh, what's going on? You know, so that definitely rings truer versus... a newer game where I really got to listen to the original over and over to get the notes right and get the timing right and all that stuff. So yeah, a little bit.
You did also kind of indirectly answered a question that I'd have often wondered about remixers, and that is, have you played every game that you remix songs for? So I guess, do you still have time to game these days, or do you find the balance of work and your music hobby and family and everything else, does that pull you away from gaming?
I still make time to play. You know, it's good to get away and escape. You know, I mean, I am a father, I'm a husband, you know, got a busy day job and stuff. But, you know, gaming is just, it's part of my hobbies. It's part of who I am. It's a pleasant escape. And I've gone through dry spells where I stop gaming. I've gone through dry spells where I stop, you know, writing. But ultimately, you strive for balance. And have I played every game I've remixed a track from? No, not at all. But does it mean more when I have? Yeah. You know, like... I think I've talked about this a little bit. The kind of the headliner theme that's in the Kickstarter video there is the Dragonborn Concerto, a remix from Skyrim, the main title theme. Now, I had originally not planned to tribute Jeremy Sewell on the second album because I felt kind of like I did that already on the first American album with a Secret of Evermore remix. And I was like, you know, I honored Jeremy Sewell. I'll move on to someone else. But when I put up the website for American Pixels a while ago, I put a little request box, like, you guys got requests, shoot me a note. And the main theme from Skyrim is one that came in, and I was like, I don't know, I've heard about this Skyrim game. I mean, it sounds like one of those gigantic games you can get lost forever in, blah, blah, blah. But I was like, all right, I'll check out the theme. And I listened to it and I was like, okay, this, I see the potential here. Who's this by? Jeremy Soule. No way. Okay. And then I got the game and boy, I got lost in it. Hats off to them. That's a good game. It was well done. But it's, yeah, I got into it.
A little scared of it for the same reason.
Yeah. And, you know, granted, the album might have even been done sooner had I not played Skyrim. It was like 100 hours gone at least. So, but whatever. But it's just funny how I kind of got introduced to the game in a roundabout way.
Sure.
So here's a question, because I'm a writer and I've had this particular novel I've been trying to finish for many, many years.
I respect that.
Are there special challenges you found with the project being, you know, it's been, what, 5 years in the making?
You know, it just comes back to, you know, don't give up and really try to remember why you started it. Whether the mood is there or the energy is there, it was there when you started it. And you got to just, you know, there's two words I put together a lot when I feel down about that is just trust yourself. Trust, you know, that you had a good idea and that you got to stick with it. And even if you're not in the mood to finish it, finish it. And whether, you know, the idea is still fresh in your mind, know that it existed and you're not a puppet working off of, you know, some boss who's droning at you to finish this thing, but it was you who came up with it. So just stick with it. That's what I would say.
Cool.
It gets related to that. I had a question and it slipped my mind. I'm sorry. Give me.
I have an album in my mind too that I've been meaning to write, but I have no idea.
Well, I get related to that. Then, yeah. Are there any games that you haven't done a remix for that you've really been itching to?
You know, for a while, the answer to that question was Maniac Mansion. Because that was one that is really under remixed, and actually, I did two with this recent one. But as far as other games, I don't know. None jumped to mind right away. I'm just
you've done quite a width and breadth of them just on Overclocked Remix alone, like 60 some over there, I think.
Yeah. 60 something. Yeah, I've done like over 100 in my entire archive. But yeah, they don't all wind up there. But
in a lot of your remixes, you meld voices. You have, you know, like different homages you have. I guess what's appealing to you about that? I know a lot of your songs like, oh, this tracker and this game. Or you
create some new genre by fusing two together.
Yeah, you know, belly dance disco. Or.
Yeah, that's a bizarre example. Yeah, well, generally, I mean, a lot of it comes down to, you know, I get bored easily. And my brain rebels when I sit down to do something that's been done before. You know, when it's kind of like straightforward techno, it's like, there's hundreds of straightforward techno. Why would I want to do that again? What if I take straightforward techno and fuse it with Caribbean and add steel drums to it? And now we're talking, you know? And honestly, that's actually what made it really hard for me to go professional. You know, I got trained, I got a bachelor's in music composition, and I moved to LA thinking I wanted to do music for movies. And I had such a hard time because that's what they wanted you to do. Straightforward score, and they would like, you know, here's a track from E.T. Now write something that sounds just like it but different. And I had the worst time doing that because it wasn't there was no originality. It was just hack work. It was just craft, and there was no creativity to it. And that's actually part of why I, you know, kind of said goodbye to that world. And I still enjoy doing the game remixes because there is the freedom. There is the freedom to make a new genre and actually have the game platform as a piggyback to jump off of, knowing that even if you make a genre that doesn't exist, that could be completely off the wall, there are still the fans of that game and the fans of that composer and the fans of, you know, the scene who will listen to it. And that's kind of comforting in a way to know that, you know, you do have the freedom to try new things in an environment where there is respect for that.
Here's a follow-up question on that. Are there other advantages to arranging, remixing, as opposed to composing?
I mean, I kind of just touched on that there's a jumping off point. You know, with composing, it's a blank slate, and there's freedom in that too. But, you know, there's also the sense that you need to have an audience already. Otherwise, you're kind of pitching not only a new composition, a new theme, a new melody, but also a new genre, a new sound set, a new style to whatever the audience is. And, you know, it's got to be pretty darn good to catch their attention. You know, this is not a bad thing, but with the game, you at least have a kind of a stepping stone where there's some aspect of, oh, okay, well, I know this game. I'll check it out. So,
okay, so go ahead. We've been kind of dancing around the thing. Give us our kind of your sales pitch for your new album.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to like try to steer it in that way. It was just, it's been on the brain, and you've been asking questions that made me think about it. So,
yeah,
I'll give you a little backstory, actually. The funny thing was back way back in like 2004. I was doing a lot of Doom 2 remixes, and it was, you know, a game that was really nostalgic to me. It was a big thing when I was growing up, and those tracks ended up being very popular because my style meshed with those themes pretty well. And I was actually talking with Mustin of the 1UPs, well, not with the 1UPs anymore, but he was for a while. And
we love the 1UPs, by the way.
Yeah, they're good friends of mine. I've hung out with them a lot.
That's awesome.
But I was talking with them about, like, hey, what if I do put like an album together, like a, you know, an homage to Robert Prince and all my Doom 2 stuff. And he was actually the one who had the idea. He's like, you know, why make it just Robert Prince? Why not make it bigger than that and actually make it about American composers? Because at the time it was really just like, you know, everything was, you know, and the remix albums back then were a new idea. You know, the Project Majestic mix, Square Dance, the Squaresoft albums were new. But everything that came out was like, okay, well, we're going to make all this effort to make an album. Let's pick the really popular franchise. Let's pick Final Fantasy. Let's pick Chrono Trigger, Mega Man, Mario, Zelda. You know, it was building a momentum, but it was all, you know, the Japanese stuff. And there were immense challenges that these guys were having getting these things licensed and finished and produced, because they had to deal with licensing across countries and international copyrights. And just trying to get a hold of the composers was a nightmare, because there were language barriers, there were, you know, all these layers of, you know, the company and bureaucracy and everything. And I just, for all these reasons together, it seemed like doing an American album would be a good idea. Not only do a nod to the American composers, but it might even be more logistically feasible, considering,
yeah,
sure, you know, you can get a hold of them. So it was his idea that spawned the journey to look beyond Doom 2 and look into, you know, who else can we approach and tribute and honor. And that's where the names started to come in, like Jeremy Soule, Jack Wall, Tommy Tallarico, Peter McConnell, you know, the Fat Man, you know, George Sanger, and these other guys. And it really grew from there, and that album was, you know, kind of a success. It was a free thing, but it was kind of a wake-up call, and it actually put me in touch with a lot of these composers, and I became friends with them.
I think there was a certain song on there, was it that I've heard a lot about?
You mean Glowworm Jim?
yeah.
Yeah, I love that album. That's a great album altogether.
You know what's funny is that Glowworm Jim I wrote in two days. Mm-hmm. And one of the other tracks in that, like the opening to Hell theme from Doom 2, took me like months. And I enjoy Glowworm Jim so much more because it happened fast.
Yeah.
And it's weird how, like, it was like the inspiration. I wrote it because I couldn't sleep. I had insomnia one night and I was like, you know what? I can't sleep. I'm gonna track. And here's a remix that, you know, Tommy said he might like to hear someday. So I'll see what happens. And honestly, that was a stylistic homage to a guy who calls himself Xerxes in what is it? Sweden, Finland, Denmark, somewhere around there. One of my electronic buddies, but European electronic, chill out guys. But yeah, I wrote most of that in one night, listened to it the next morning, and I was like, wow, I made that? Cool, let's finish it. And I finished it, and I love that track too, but it was funny that I didn't labor over it. It just flowed. But regardless.
It's nice when an idea just works.
Yeah. So, but anyways, I got off topic, but that was an example of the album came together well. And even then, as I was talking about that project when it was done, I was meeting other composers. I was becoming acquainted with guys like Gerard Marino from God of War, and, you know, I was introduced to, you know, other folks. Gary Scheinman from BioShock was kind of, you know, coming up at that point. You know, I met him at a Video Games Live thing in Hollywood, and it was just kind of like, you know, there's a lot of potential here. There's a lot of other composers to honor. There's more music, and it was scratching in the back of my brain for a long time. Like, what if I did a sequel? And I would occasionally sit down and make a list of, like, well, I would do these tracks, and then I'd throw away the list and come back a year later and do it again and kind of look and like, well, what if? And honestly, you know, this has been a long time coming. And frankly, I think I put up the website and the idea for this album way too soon, because when I did the first American album, I had a lot of free time. I was working freelance in L.A. I was single. Big factor.
Yeah. I have three kids now, so I understand.
Yeah, staying up all night writing, you know, freedom, whatever. And then after I announced this second album idea, you know, I was running my own business. I was married. I was, you know, paying bills. I just bought a house. It was crazy. And I had the foolish expectation early on that I could crank it out as quickly as the first one, that, you know, give me a year, boom, I'll write all this stuff. And wow, life happened. And music became like, you know, it, quote unquote, free time. You know, when I have a snippet of free time, I'll work on this. And lo and behold, 5 years have gone by, and it's been a slow build. And granted, it's, you know, like you said, with your novel, there's been all sorts of ebbs and flows of like, you know, do you just give up? Do you still care? You know, whatever. So, but, you know, I had kind of a breakthrough earlier this year where it was like, you know, make this happen. And I kind of switched up my own personal schedule to where I would wake up at 5 a.m., go down to my man cave, work for an hour. I know late at night, I'm tired. I've been working all day. I don't want to go back and work. But if I get up early, I can devote an hour to my craft, get back into it, and just make me time. You know, granted, I won't be up as late, but that's fine. And I made that change earlier this year, and it really kind of spurned momentum back into this. And July was approaching, and I was like, I got to make this happen. So like come mid-May, I was like, I'm putting a date on this. I'm putting a hard date on this, which helped. So July 4th. I'm launching the Kickstarter July 4th. So until then, I have every day in between to get stuff done. So I've been frantically, semi-frantically, getting my performers recorded, finding a recording studio locally that can do the mastering, trying them out, you know, just doing all the writing, getting the video produced, getting the script written for that. You know, the whole process, it was really like a 1 month, you know, every single day, getting things prepped, getting it, you know, squared away and making the Kickstarter happen so that the album could actually get done. You know, otherwise, it might have been a case of, you know what, just release what's been done already, release it for free, wipe my hands of this. But, you know, since the beginning, I've really wanted this particular project to be, you know, it's like a bucket list thing. I just want to have the CD. I want to be able to hold it in my hand, wrapped in plastic, and see my name on it and be like, this is the one thing that I went completely all in on. I did the very best I could. I got it made. I got it licensed. I got it out there. It's on iTunes. It's on Amazon. It's out there. And, you know, not only is it a sense of completion with an idea, but ideally, you know, it could be passive income from here on. You write it, you get it out there, and then you keep getting paid for it year after year. Even if it's only a little bit, it's something that's done and is out there. And that's, you know, motivation too. I'm trying to take care of my wife and child and, you know, provide. So, and ultimately, hopefully, generate enough interest and energy and even funding off of this to create more projects. I mean, I have a lot of other stuff in the brain, as video game and otherwise, that I'd love to get done.
Nice.
But you know, I want to finish. I got to finish this one first. I can't start the next project yet. I got to finish this one. So it's been a long time coming. And really, I stand beside the music on this. You know, I mentioned in the Kickstarter video that a lot of the tracks on here might be obscure. They might be not the most popular or the most famous, but they're what the composers asked for, and that's huge, huge to me.
Yeah.
That you know, I reach out and say, I want to honor you. What do you want to hear? And they give me a track from a game that flopped, but man, they cared about that track. It means a lot to them. So you know what? I'm going to make it awesome. So I pour my own self into making these tracks come alive in a whole new way. And they won't be the first thing people search for when they type into Google to hear music. But you know what? It's what the composer wanted to hear, and I stand by it. So the music on this is really, really darn good.
Awesome.
Related to that, how do you think you've changed creatively between the first American album and this one?
I guess maybe just a higher standard as far as quality. I mean, I really try to use higher quality sounds. I really try to mix and master to a higher level. And a big difference with this, actually, oddly enough, before the first American album, I was in college. And in college, I had this idea of what if I were to write a solo, like a solo, you know, violin piece. And they play over electronics. And I actually wrote a few of these in college where it was like, you know, violin techno or electric bass over electronic jazz or, you know, weird stuff like that. I did a marimba piece over electronics. And I love the idea. I love the idea of, you know, live fusing with the electric. And then, you know, and part of that was out of necessity. In college, I actually had requirements to have a half hour concert for my junior year, and then my senior year, a full hour concert where it's live. You know, I'm out there, I'm conducting, I have ensembles, I have string quartets, I have soloists, I have whatever. And I kind of felt like, you know, I can't just do electronic music and play it, you know, and through a speaker, but I got to have people there. So in college I did that, and it was, you know, it was hit or miss. You know, not every piece worked, but it was definitely a new way to look at, you know, bring these different worlds together. And then after college, I kind of hung that idea on the shelf, like, you know, someday I'll do that again. And the American album is purely electronic. It's all just me. It's all through the tracker, the computer. pretty much that's it, except for a couple of funny, you know, voice clips where other people come in. But with this one, I actually wanted to bring back the idea that I had in college, you know, 15 years ago now, and bring that back to the forefront of putting people in there, really adding a human element to it. And there are 9 tracks out of 14 on this album that feature a soloist, that feature a live human performer who is playing an instrument with electronic undertones. That is probably the biggest difference that you would hear between these two albums side by side, is that it's beyond me. It's more than just what I can make happen in perfection in a computer, but I'm really bringing on a human element and fusing that in a way that not only allows a performer to shine in a very challenging piece, and granted, what I wrote was pretty darn hard, you know, but also just maybe spark the interest of other, you know, classical performers who are coming up learning an instrument, that there's more that they can play in a concert setting beyond just, you know, Bach and Beethoven and Mozart, or the other side of the coin, the 20th century avant-garde neoclassical weird stuff, which is a lot of what's out there. But you can actually have kick-ass music that you can play over that also allows you to show your talent with that instrument. So, you know, that's something else. Like, I have trombone, electric bass, flute, classical guitar, marimba, you know, and other instruments represented on this thing in a way that I think is fairly, you know, new. And hopefully that catches the interest of that scene as well, and sparks the interest to have more music like that made.
Awesome. I'm excited.
Yeah. I mean, I've been excited.
Well, so. Good.
No, definitely. A lot of OC Remix stuff is all electronic, but it's always adds an extra layer of cool whenever you got live stuff in it. So that sounds really cool.
Yeah, and there's certain instruments that are kind of, you know, that come back. There's a lot of violin, there's a lot of piano, guitar. Occasionally you get like saxophone. But, you know, I'm really trying to think outside the box. Like, what if there was a bassoon solo? What if there's a vibraphone or celeste? What if someone brings on a bandoneon and rocks out on that? You know, those are the instruments that you don't hear so often. But man, there's people who pour their heart into learning that instrument. Why not? You know?
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess we're about at the end of our time, but I got one more question. So
sure.
What would you most like the listeners of this album get out of it?
Hopefully an experience that is unlike any that they've heard before in terms of game remixing, where it's beyond just hearing a track from a game redone in rock, you know, but that there's a deeper level of imagination. There's a deeper level of homage and tribute to not only the composer and the game, but to just the idea of arranging game music in general. That it can be a whole different experience in terms of not only what you hear, but also how it's played, how it's brought to life, how it's interpreted, and that, you know, there's room for potential with any piece of music that can be brought back to life in a variety of ways, whether it's from Nintendo or stripped down from orchestra. I mean, this project has themes that were originally on Nintendo that are reimagined for flute. There's pieces that were done for choir that are reimagined for chiptunes. Or chips, you know, so it's just really, you know, hearing something and having the openness in your brain to look at it and say, how does it speak to me? And how can I make it speak again to others? So I guess that would be the answer to that.
Awesome.
Sounds fabulous.
Well, we will have the link to the Kickstarter on our webpage and in show notes, and we'll make sure we get you some traffic.
Very cool. I appreciate it. Thanks for letting me talk about me.
Well, thanks for joining us. Yeah. It's been really fun.
Yeah,
no problem. Hey, thanks. Thanks again, seriously, for supporting this project, you know, years ago, back when it was just a website with a list of names that I was trying to make happen. Now it's right here, so.
I can attest, Nick is always talking about you. So. He's one of your biggest fans that you've probably never heard of.
I'm a lurker.
Well, hey, there's a lot more to come. So, you know, thank you, and stay tuned.
Yeah, all thank right. you. Well, good luck.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
You got it. You guys have a good one.
All right, that was our conversation with Christopher Getman, a.k.a. Maze Dude.
So please, if you have any interest at all in such creative music, go to his Kickstarter, American Pixels, sign up for it. You'll get great music, and you could use your support to make the best album possible.
Yep. That was a lot of fun to talk with him about that stuff.
Yeah, he was a great guy. Very, you know, great stories.
And it was kind of refreshing too, you know, because you and I, we sort of struggle sometimes just to get the podcast out.
Yeah.
And it's just cool to see someone who more people have heard of than us deals with some of the same challenges in terms of getting his creativity out.
We had a story after we stopped recording where he talked about how he, part of his creative drain was coming home. He'd work a job, he'd come home and it's like he's working a job again trying to do the music. And
another office, essentially.
And he changed his whole downstairs into basically a man cave where he painted the walls and stuff. He said it just helped tremendously just having a workplace that's different.
Yeah.
So I thought that was an interesting addition that didn't get in the record section.
Yeah, so something might have to consider in the future.
Yeah, I have no good workplace. I just like, oh, here's a corner, I work, which is probably not helpful. But
yeah.
So we should probably do our first soundtrack.
Sounds good. So if you would like to get a sample of Maze Dude's American Pixels album, this is your lucky day, because that is our soundtrack.
Yes, he sent us a sampler of the album. It's what, 3-4 minutes?
Something like that.
And it just gives you a kind of a taste of some of the crazy music that you'll get by purchasing the album.
Enjoy. Stuff.
All right. Yes. We've been talking about Christopher Getman, Maze Dude, for this first half of our show.
And you know where you can listen to a lot of his music?
Overclock Remix. He has over 60 of them.
Well, but where is Overclock Remix?
On the internet.
Oh, so you mean
it's came from the interwebs. Thank you.
See, folks, that's what we call a transition.
It was very, very nice.
Okay. So we thought, since we're in kind of a Maze Dude theme right now, we thought we'd play a little game with Nick here.
Because apparently everyone thinks I'm the Maze Dude fan.
I mean, I enjoy Maze Dude too, but he has a special sound that just seems to appeal to, hits all your remix buttons.
It does. It does hit all my remix buttons. Okay, so Tim's going to pick one of his 60 plus on Overclock Remix. He's going to play part of it, and I'm going to see if I can remember what it is.
I would play something from his website too, but it's...
he's fixing it. MazeDudeMusic.com.
All right.
See, I recognize it.
Let's see. This is from 2007.
That's not going to help me. Oh, trad. See, the first one, I can't name it. see, a lot of times I just listen to them on, like, randomly. I'm enjoying it quite a bit right now, but I'm having trouble remembering what it's from. I don't think it's one of the Doom ones.
Well, that was about 30 seconds worth, yeah. So any guesses?
Let's try Enlightened Alaskan.
Nope.
Okay.
It is from the game Psychonauts.
Oh, yeah.
It is called Psychotic Sensors.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You're correct.
I know I'm correct. I was just looking at the webpage.
Epic fail. No. Okay. Let's try another one.
This one's a little more recent, so...
I don't think the reason it cares as much as certain ones I listen to more than others.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see here.
I'm going to...
Oh, this sounds like Slam Davis.
Wow, that was impressive. Yes. I thought I'd go with something easy from the Balance and Ruin album.
This is a very good take on the Zozo theme.
Final Fantasy VI. I figured you'd get it. I didn't figure you'd get it from just that very little bit.
And I think, you know, he
first.
Was talking about how he started using, you know, live things. This is one of those ones that he has the trumpet.
Oh,
you know,
okay, yeah.
Playing very Davis wise.
Right. All right.
Very film noir.
Yes. Kind of has that sleazy tone to it. Okay.
See, when I know him, I know him.
Well, I'm gonna test your memory. I'm gonna do one we played on the podcast.
Oh, okay.
Way back. All right. This was a while ago, I think.
All right, here we go. Flubber Mountain. I actually listened to this one today.
Oh, did you? Ow.
Well, because I was listening to a couple of them earlier today, but I'm like, you know what? I wanted to refresh myself.
I'm gonna jump ahead here a little bit.
Yeah. Let's see. See, this is a perfect example of like crazy Maze Dude, like goofy Maze Dude.
Yes, because there's a lot of dark Maze Dude out there, but he knows how to do his goofy stuff too.
Like this, or like Cool Spot. You remember that one when he just whistles? And it's like the most happy-go-lucky song ever.
I don't think I remember that one.
That one's pretty fun. Yeah, this is him using sounds that don't show up in songs.
Not normally.
Outside of Looney Tunes.
All right, let's see. I'm clicking this one just because I like the name.
Okay, let's see. Oh, boy. I can almost...
I'm not even sure what the genre is yet, to be honest.
Yeah. This is pretty classic, like, electronic-y tracker. See, I know the song.
You know
it's disconnected.
The game?
I don't think so. This isn't Tangerine Fever, is it?
It is.
Yes.
Nice job.
All right, from Donkey Kong something or other.
Donkey Kong Country 3.
Nice. Yes.
Well done. That's the sort of one we want you to be able to pull out. Not too easy, but made you think a little bit.
Yes.
I think you will recognize this one. This one was when he was going through a certain phase.
A certain phase. Tripping on alligators.
Yeah.
Early Maze Dude.
Yes, early Maze Dude. When he was tripping on stuff.
He was tripping on snails, tripping on gators, tripping on rainbows.
Yep.
All very different songs, by the way. Tripping on Snails was one of my early favorites. I think that was one of the first ones I remember listening to and thinking, this is awesome. It's from Rygar. I've never played Rygar in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just hip.
All right, let's see.
There's only like two or three Bayou Billy songs on the whole site.
Can't imagine why.
Well, it has good music, obviously. Well, I mean, Maze Dude made it.
I mean, I don't know. It's just not one of those games that people think, oh, man, you remember The Adventures of Bayou Billy? That was one of the best. All right, here's another one.
Oh, this is the beginning of the American album, actually. This is from Jazz Jackrabbit or whatever. I don't know what it's called, actually. It's just always track one in the American album. And track two is Glowworm Jim.
So that's why you don't remember it.
Exactly. It's some American something in the title, I think, isn't it?
No. It's well, it sounds very American. It's called Jackrabbit Transformer.
Okay.
It is
a very patriotic sounding song, very the drums and...
Well, the title makes me think of like a fusion of Briar Rabbit and Michael Bay.
Possibly.
Jackrabbit
Transformer. I would like to see that. Maybe.
Jumping ahead here a little bit.
It is one of the very like triumphant sort of songs. Well, you don't always get from Maze Dude. These, a lot of them are the more industrial, dark, you know, doomish. Mm-hmm. Not all of them, but yeah, certainly the style.
Yeah, he mentioned Doom 3 earlier. Let's see, there, he has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different Doom 3 remixes, which most of the
Doom
games.
Doom 3?
Oh, I'm sorry, Doom 2. Yeah. My bad. Which, yeah, most of the games he does, he really only has one remix for each one, but that one he has 6, so it's quite prominent.
And they're all awesome.
Given that, let's see.
Uh-oh, because some of the early ones I'll get mixed up.
let's go for one here, since we were just talking about Doom 2, so I'm giving you a hint off.
Doom 2, yes, but there are 6 of them.
Yes.
If it's an later one, I could probably do it. If it's an earlier one, it'll be like, it's one of those Doom ones. And then there's the come up here. Sorry, I know I'm really geeky. It's actually been a while since I heard this one. Is this the Bloodbath one?
Nope,
it's not the Bloodbath one.
I wonder we should have played this with him, honestly. I wonder if you'd have the same trouble. He probably would know all his own songs pretty well.
But this isn't Sandy Gothic, is it? No, that one's more chiptune-y, I think.
No, you got it.
Was it that one?
It's Gothic Sandy.
Gothic Sandy. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, these are all early ones. I remember they were some of my early collections and burnt CDs. They're very energetic and driving.
Let's try this one. This one's not doesn't fall in that early Maze Dude category. I'm gonna jump ahead here to the.
Is this Opening to Hell?
Say what?
No, it's not. This is the Mummy Dance.
Yes. Very impressive. From
some Kirby game.
Yeah, Kirby Superstar.
Yeah, this is the Belly Dance Disco.
I'm going to jump ahead to the minute 30 mark.
Yeah. Kind of a trademark bizarre instruments you don't normally hear. And kind of a weird dance thing.
Yeah, it's like a cartoonish Middle Eastern type thing. Which, if there's a, there must be like a pyramid level in the Kirby game or something, that would make perfect sense. All right, this one might throw you a little bit.
All right, here we go.
We'll see. I don't know.
It's a Sonic 2, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, but what do they call it? It's just all like marimba the whole time.
See, I wasn't sure if you would know this because you said you don't particularly go for Sonic.
No, this is this one. Often. The couple Sonics I like. I like this and anything that's the Mystic Cave song. And Marble in the Marble Zone. Okay. Those three. Like Green Hill Zone, I just don't care for that much.
I enjoyed the 1-Ups version of it.
And well, okay. It's 1-Ups version.
I don't know. I haven't but listened what to is
the name
of,
what is
Green
the name
Hill.
Of it? It's...
Oh, this one, it is...
I don't remember the title.
Reich Lake?
Okay, yeah. I think that's the composer that he's imitating.
Oh, okay. It is kind of catchy.
It is.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
the problem is a lot of his are from the earlier days, which yeah. are because, you know, this is before you got real busy. So.
Yeah. Yeah, he put out a lot of it.
I'm trying to find a nice
Oh, this
balance,
is some, this is like Turtles Through Time, isn't it?
Close. It is a Turtles game.
It is a Turtle game.
Yeah.
What is it? Oh, I don't, see, the problem is I don't know the titles of half of these. You just like, you know, cycle through that's Maze Dude music.
Yeah, you're clearly on the right track.
It's, yeah, it's the Turtles is like sewer something or, I don't know.
It's called Turtle Wave.
Turtle Wave.
And it's from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, The Manhattan Project.
Okay. I guess I got to memorize the titles better. It's funny, like I don't do it very much anymore, but when I was on my, I had CDs and I drove a long way in the car, I'd always know like, I couldn't tell you the name of any track, but like, it's track 8. Track 8 was always awesome in all my CDs for some reason. That was the Kefka on Final Fantasy VI's soundtrack. But with the iPod, it's just not the same.
All right, let's go for a different sound. At least I'm assuming.
Assuming.
Oh, we will know this one. Well, here it is anyway.
Oh, yeah, this is the seventh guest.
Yeah. I saw it was from the American album. I didn't realize.
Yeah,
that
see,
when
I know
it.
The American album pretty well. Yeah. Yeah. Of course, what's the name of it?
It's called Microscopism.
Okay. Yep.
Well, that was a fail. Let's try.
Epic fail.
Let's try this one.
Oh, I think I just listened to this today. The Wizard's Bride from Wizards and Warriors.
Yes.
Yes.
You're too good at this.
Maybe we should switch, and I'll pull up Maze Dude song.
No, I would do terrible.
How about this? I'll pull up songs, and you tell me whether it's Maze Dude or not. It's like when we had the, is it Faulkner or not?
Is it what?
Faulkner, William Faulkner, or is it computer generated? Classic episode, section.
Yep, that was fun. We've featured a song from this game before, but I don't remember if it was a Maze Dude one or not. You can tell me.
This Heartbeats?
Yeah.
By Neighbor Zombie, they might need.
Yeah. Did we do that one?
I think we did this one.
Okay.
If not, I do like this song a lot.
Okay, well.
Because that's the quintessential Maze Dude. Like, hey, let's just take this sound and see if we make a song out of it. The scary thing is, it's not just Maze Dude. I can do this all.
All right. This is one that he talked about.
Oh, this must be from, this is Wheels of Wonder?
Yes,
from,
okay, American from, Wheels of Wonder is the name of
okay,
it.
Okay, from Exile?
Yeah, Myst 3 Exile, three. Which yep. he talked about this one, I believe.
Yeah. I think this is one of those he says it was all orchestral, he changed it to more chiptune, maybe? That might be another one, actually. That might be the one from Myst 4, 5, something like that. You know, he has this chiptune EP. They took some modern games and did just chiptune remixes of them.
Mm-hmm.
You can find it on Bandcamp. Poor Tim there. He's just like, this is a
I didn't realize how many from the American album made it onto OC Remix.
Yeah, they've been making them slowly. I think he's got most of them on now. Especially when they opened up the time limit.
Mm. I'm trying to find some in kind of the sweet spot. That's like not too recent, but not some of the old stuff that you've listened to for years. Try this one. Again, just because I like the title. Kind of a vague opening.
It's a little vague. Oh. Let me get a little more. I do recognize it now.
I'm going to jump ahead to the one minute mark.
Is this the...
Oh, no, something's different. Oh.
Is this the Plock song
that
he did in the style of Echo the Dolphin? What did he call it?
I think you're on the right track.
This isn't Dolphin with a Shotgun. That's the other one, isn't
no,
it?
No, this is Dolphin this with a Shotgun.
Okay.
Yep.
Because he slowed it down like 400% or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah. From what the original.
That's crazy.
Do enjoy it, though.
All right.
All right.
Try this one, and then we'll wrap it up.
Clax. Some sort of 9-inch It's done in style 9-inch nails, I believe.
Yeah, 9-inch clacks.
Yep.
I never heard of this game. Clacks? What was this even for?
I have no idea.
Huh. Oh, NES. Okay.
I mean, that's the weird thing about, you know, like, I'll like music even if I had known nothing about the game.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy always hit the spot, but...
All right, I'm going to try
one more.
Yeah, it was like, I can't believe, like, you missed the first one, and you've gotten, like, every single one since then.
It gave you hope, Tim.
I was just hoping for a mix. I didn't expect it to be all one-sided after the fact.
This is from Battletoads.
Good grief.
Done in style, like, kind of Seinfeld-ish.
It does sort of sound Seinfeld-ish.
Is this Toad Jam? Is that what they call it?
Toad's in the title, but Toad's, no.
Okay, yeah, I see the title that I'm pretty bad at, but...
This is Toad's in the Suite.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
This is the one we'll end with.
Oh, one more.
You'll know this, but...
You got to end with it?
I think there's a good... This is a nice way to go out.
Okay. Oh, man. Yeah, Zeal from Chrono Trigger. Dreams of Zeal? I don't even remember what the title is.
It's Island of Zeal.
Island of Zeal. This is like his first one, I believe.
I believe so.
And it probably sounds the least like Maze Dude. I mean, in the sense that it's kind of normal.
Yeah, it's actually very close to the original, I'd say.
Very nice percussion and atmosphere, but yeah, not changing styles like often happens.
Yeah. So yeah, if you were to compare like this to say some of his other stuff, this definitely feels like the least evolved.
Yeah, what year was this?
2001.
Nice. So 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very nice remix of Zeal though.
Oh yeah. Nothing wrong with it at all.
Anyone has to remix Zeal at one point or another, I guess.
Now, hasn't been a Chrono Trigger album on OC Remix?
There was.
There was?
Quite a while ago.
Okay.
One of the early ones. It was Chrono Symphonic or something like that.
Okay.
It's all in like classical style.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah, it was kind of like almost like a soundtrack for if there was a movie.
Interesting.
That was kind of the conceit, yeah.
I'll have to go check that out. Now that I've played the game.
Yeah, that's true. Now that you finally played it. Yeah. So. All right.
Cool stuff.
Well, guys, I know there's been a lot of... Maze Dude music here, but yes. We thought after the interview he added so many good things. We didn't really feel like distracting it with
other stuff.
Yeah,
it was like, he's the professional here. He's like, let's just go all out with it.
Yeah, let's have some fun. So hopefully that if you hadn't had an exposure yet, hopefully those gave you a sense of some of his style things. I think this new album will be really pushing things to the pinnacle of what he can get done, sounds like.
And hopefully we've played a nice variety of stuff in this half that you won't be too scared off by some of the more crazy stuff. Like, he's got a nice range. Even he has a certain eclectic sound, but he still has a nice range with
it. Yeah, it goes from goofy to, like...
horrific.
The Minotaur Nightmare one.
Yeah, well, I think we did that one at some point.
With it has like the Nazgul sound in it, I think.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, something like that.
Cool.
So we'll have to do our contact info here.
Yes. So if this is your first time listening to Derailed Trains of Thoughts, we are normally not this music heavy. We're normally all about storytelling. I'm the videographer, Nick's the writer.
And this has just been a special episode since we had a special guest.
Mm-hmm. But you can find all of our past episodes at derailedtrainsofthought.blogspot.com.
And we're on iTunes, Stitcher, etc. Tell your friends. If you like our podcast, tell friends because...
Tell our friends.
Tell our friends, do it, yes. But I know you even had a friend who just like, what? You have a podcast? And you've done like 60 some of them? Like, yeah, we've been advertising. But things just don't
sometimes
get out.
Sometimes it slips through the cracks of
there's
Facebook's
so much stuff in social media.
And, yeah, there is. It's sad. But yes, we've been here. We've got a whole bunch of episodes about ranging on everything from genre stuff like post-apocalyptic, to romance, to
more philosophical ideas of, you know,
how do you incorporate your worldview in your story,
or morality, or other, you know, in stories,
or the nature of heroes and villains, and a nice wide range of topics,
for both practical things and more abstract things, and things for the just people who like to watch stories, and mm-hmm. also things for people who like to create stories.
Exactly. So we're pretty proud of our library, I guess.
Yeah. And most people that I've talked to are fans. When they find us, they like us. They just don't find us.
So. And then, of course, don't forget to check out, we've said it a lot, but don't forget to check out Maze Dude's Kickstarter and his webpage, which should be up and running again, hopefully before too long.
Yeah. Because I think the Kickstarter ends like August 4th around. It's about a 30-day thing.
But again, this all started because of a certain soundtrack request.
Yes. So normally we try to keep our soundtracks to about 3 to 4 minutes because we want to talk more than listen to music because it's not necessarily a music podcast. But there's this remix by Maze Dude called Glowworm Jim, which it's been kind of a running joke between Tim and I for quite a while now, I think.
I don't know how long. At some point, you came up with this idea, and like last year or so, you keep keep bringing it up. So now we're going to get it out of your system.
We're going to play it, and then after that,
because Maze Dude asked for it.
Maze Dude asked for it. So, but anyways, why? Besides, it's just fun to harass Tim about it. There's a lot of remixes that I'll listen to multiple times, but this one is like perennially always good. Like I can just listen to it and repeat. It's like 7 minutes and listen and repeat. It's very chill, like aggressive chill out kind of. It's great for when I'm walking and just want to kind of let my brain brainstorm and just have this in the background. It's a song for all seasons. So anyways, I hope you may not enjoy it as much as I do, but here it is. Glowworm Jim.
And meanwhile, we are going to try to work our way out of here before I've seen like weird little goblin creatures running past.
Yeah,
and
the people song that we need to dance or something.
Yeah, there's definitely a party going on in that castle there. A party or a battle, I'm not sure which.
Those creatures that kept like throwing their heads around, it's just kind of disturbing.
This place is weird, and I'm for advocate of getting out of here.
Yes, let's do it.
Okay, so thanks again for listening. Thanks again, once again, to Maze Dude for joining us. Should be glad he didn't have to come to this labyrinth with us, but... but we enjoyed having a conversation.
Yes,
it was
very, very enjoyable and fascinating conversation.
So until next time, this has been Tim.
This is Nick.
Bye.